Hashtag FatSideUp. Tweet to Bill at BillIsKing to enter the arena of ideas.
Wednesday's Pick 6 Previews joins us. Brett, Coach Marshall here was just pointing out on Twitter, Penn State in the class of 22, right now ranked number one in recruiting. What's going on up there?
Yeah, good morning, Bill. The people are talking up here in Penn State territory. Yeah, they've been talking for a while about this 22 class, a return to the top of the recruiting rankings, and really reclaiming the Pennsylvania footprint of recruits. So because they took somewhat of a step back in 2021, that class, and they allowed some out-of-state teams to come in. Maryland, they get some big prospects in the region, but 22, they've really locked down, and right now they're number one in the overall nation. I know it's way early, but that's a good sign.
Yeah, things can change on those numbers, but yes, number one ranking, and I don't think anybody's ever questioned the angle of James Franklin from a being able to sell something point of view. That's the best thing he does.
Yeah, and I mean, look at what he did at Vanderbilt, too. That was one of the more impressive coaching runs out there when you think of program context and program history. And what he was able to accomplish there was incredible. And then fast forward now to Penn State. I know that Bill O'Brien helped save the program there in 2012 and 2013, but really with Franklin, he elevated it quickly after those sanctions, after the scholarship reductions that Penn State had to go through. A few years later, a nice offensive coordinator hire with Joe Moorhead, and they win the Big Ten. So, impressive what he's done there. The recruiting's always been there. The branding always been there. So this would just be the next step, taking it from top 15 area in recruiting to a top five or even a number one class is incredible. So, especially given the geography. I mean, most of the recruits out there, the top 300 or top 500, they're based in the Southeast, or Texas or California or Florida, you know, right, or Georgia. So to pull this off in Pennsylvania is impressive.
The Big 12 and Pac-12, the commissioners, met on Tuesday to discuss what they could do perhaps as a tandem in the future, whether it's merge or come up with some kind of scheduling agreement. Do you see any attractiveness there in that topic?
Well, I mean, at this point, it's hard to really evaluate any of this stuff. It's crazy. I just don't know what the end game is. I mean, because I think you need to first determine what the end game is and work backwards. So if we're pretty much set on going to these super leagues, these super conferences, then I guess you just try and start to find strategic mergers as quickly as possible. But I don't understand it. I mean, we've talked, I like the old history, the old regionality of the sport, and now you're going to have West Virginia flying to Oregon on Wednesday nights to play volleyball. It just, it doesn't make sense. But who knows, maybe it's a football-only agreement, maybe it's just some non-conference matchups to fill out their schedule. We'll have to wait and see. But interesting there. Interesting with Kansas and the Big Ten. Talks are happening, apparently. But again, it's crazy. We don't know what's happening behind closed doors or what the total end game is.
I look at it from a Pac-12 point of view. Without Texas and Oklahoma, you've got eight teams left. How would merging with Kansas State, Baylor, Texas Tech, etc., make you better?
Yeah, well, I guess it would just be the old, the geography footprint of TV, TV eyeballs, that old thing. It reminds me of the 2011 and 2010 conference realignment carousel. So I don't know. If we're still stuck in the TV footprint thing, then at least you're adding the Midwest, you're adding Texas, maybe unlock some recruiting pipeline down there in Texas. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the goal is. But you're right that I don't know what the point of adding all eight of those is. maybe pick off one or two and move your league up to 14 teams, maybe add another a team out west like BYU or Boise State if you want to go to 16. But I'm not sure what a 12-team league in the Pac-12 wants to add eight, and all eight, too. That's the thing, add all eight from the Big 12. I don't know how much value some of those are really bringing the Pac-12 individually.
Yeah, we were just talking. This is obviously, and you've already referred to it, this is about the TV money. All of this is, if you want to boil it down, it's not about anything else but the acquisition of the most TV money you can get for your league. And again, I've got no problem with that. We know that. It's sometimes cloaked as something different, but it's the acquisition of the TV money. And the question is, if you're the Pac-12 and you add Lawrence, Kansas, and you add Manhattan, Kansas, and you add Waco, Texas, and you add Lubbock, Texas, how does that make you more attractive to the TV people to write a bigger check? From what I understand, the Pac-12 TV deal is about the same as the Big 12 TV deal, money-wise. So if you merged, how does that make that number bigger? And maybe, Brett, there's a TV exec who can explain that to me, but I don't understand that.
Yeah, you make a good point, too, because then you're talking about, so yeah, maybe the gross number goes up. Maybe you're adding all that value from Texas, but then remember that you're dividing it by all the same number of schools. So
you're feeding just, more mouths.
Yeah, it's a bigger pie, but it's the same slice for everybody. I don't know. So that's a great point you bring up there. And yeah, and it is all about TV. If it weren't about TV, you'd have Boise State in the Pac-12 by now, because if it was football only, they've proven over 25 years that they belong in a Power 5 league. BYU has, of course, the history going back all the way to the 70s and 80s. So, if it was up to me, if it was strictly just football and there weren't any other, logistical issues or any other TV deals to go with, I'd love to see those two West Coast teams stick together. I'd love to see the Texas team stick together. I mean, if they doubled down on their region and their regional footprint in the Big 12, and they added, say, like an SMU and a Houston, and really just and stayed within their region, that'd be cool. But, we all know that's not going to happen. I know that it's all about the TV money, too, and I'm just a football dreamer here. I'm wanting to go back. Everyone's moving forward with this. I just want to go back to the old days, but it's never going to happen.
Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 previews here in a second. We'll let you know how you can get all of his content. Miles Brennan has an injury to his left arm. He's a righty thrower, but they're saying this will require surgery down at LSU. And he's going to be out for an undetermined amount of time, apparently a long time. And Blake Ruffino down in Louisiana will be with us here in a little bit. Maybe we'll get more specifics. When handicapping, Brett, that quarterback race that we thought we were about to get here in camp between Brennan and Max Johnson, I thought Johnson was the better quarterback, but what does that do to your perception, if any, when it comes to LSU?
Yeah, well, you mentioned Blake. He does a great job there. I was on his show about a week ago talking about the preseason preview book that I wrote, talking LSU, talking SEC, everything. So he does an excellent job. He'll have more insider info, but as it relates to LSU, yeah, I actually had Max Johnson pegged as a starter in my book. I thought that what he provided last year after TJ Finley was excellent. He was, I think his skill set fits better too with the RPO game. He's going to add more on the ground and through the air. I mean, he was clutch toward the end of that season. So I liked him to win the job anyway, even if it was a three-man race. Now, of course, it looks a lot different now a couple months later, where you have TJ Finley transfer out to Auburn. You have Miles Brennan, the fifth-year player there, now injured and knocked out. So you go from a crowded room with transfers to very thin now. So as it relates to the starter, I had him pegged anyway as a starter, but now you're talking depth issues where any kind of hit for you, if he's knocked out for a game or two, you're very thin there. So starter-wise, it stays the same for me, but depth-wise, that certainly hurts losing him.
Yeah, you lose your starter. You lose Max Johnson to an injury, and their opener is UCLA. And quarterbacks do get dinged up, then you are going to a quarterback who has no experience at all, which we could say, well, Max Johnson and Finley didn't have any last year either. But, yeah, it thins you out a lot, doesn't it, without Brennan?
Yeah, of course. And it's such a physical league in the SEC. And you mentioned UCLA. They're going to have one of their better teams in a long time, better than all the other Chip Kelly teams they've had. So, yeah, and just quarterback, the way that they want to run him, too, in the RPO game, he'll take a lot of hits. So you always just want to have that safety valve. And Miles Brennan, not to diminish him and call him a safety blanket, but quality 4 or 5 year guy on campus that has started games and had number one reps in practice. Of course, that's valuable. So without him there, you lose that extra layer, and it'll be a lot more variable. Hopefully Max Johnson stays okay and can lead this thing for 13 plus games. But we'll see.
Brett Cianci, Pick Six Previews. Leave us with this. We were talking yesterday, obviously somewhere here in the future, maybe sooner than later, Texas and Texas A&M have to play again in football. That's the topic here, football. And we were looking at Brad Powers' power rankings, and A&M's about a 7-point number better than Texas. If they had to play this year, how would you handicap that game?
Yeah, so I definitely would have A&M favored. Related to my rankings, I have A&M 8th in the nation and Texas down at, I think, 18th. So there's a nice gap there.
Yeah.
I like 7. I'll go with 7, a full touchdown better. I think the more interesting way of looking at it, since they won't play for 5 years or so, would be over the first 10 times they play, what's it going to be? How are you going to cut that up? And given program trajectories, the way these are recruiting, the staffs, now, granted, I guess the staffs might change in 5 years, but just assuming that the next 10 times they play, I'd probably go A&M 7, 7-3, something like that. And as I'm saying this hypothetical, it's kind of funny to think, because 5 years from now it could be two completely different staffs. But I'm excited to have that rivalry back. It was one of the important ones to college football that went away from the last wave of realignment. So I guess there is a silver lining this time around. Usually we don't get any silver linings, but this time you do get some historic rivalries back. You get Texas-Arkansas back, too, the old Southwest Conference. So, yeah, I mean, that'll be a great one to come back. They can't dodge each other anymore. No more excuses.
Okay, I lied to you. One more. Josh up in London, Ohio. Quinn Ewers from the Dallas area, number one ranked player in the class of 22 at any position, quarterback, has been committed to Ohio State, announced here recently, "I'm not playing my senior year. I'm going on to Ohio State. I'm reclassifying to the class of 21, and I've got a bunch of NIL money coming to me." Your thoughts, though. Josh wants to know your thoughts on the quarterback race coming up in camp at Ohio State. Do you still handicap Stroud as the starter?
Yeah, well, what a great problem to have if you're Ryan Day, right? It's a very crowded room, 3 5-star quarterbacks. They probably start almost anywhere else in the country, each of them, so... it's a great problem to have. I think that Ewers will be too young and too fresh to come in. You're talking about really a high school senior, very late in the process, no spring ball, no summer camp. We're talking it's August right now. He's going to make it just in time for fall camp. I think Stroud is the safer pick to start day one. He's 2 years on campus now. He has a five-star billing himself. He won the Elite 11 a few years back, that quarterback competition, and rose up the depth chart last year. It was Fields' backup. Scored a 50-yarder, the only carry he had. So it's very limited sample size, but he was the starter all in spring and looked fine in the spring game. So I'd go Stroud. McCord's in there too, a 5-star from Philadelphia, St. Joe's Prep. And then you have Ewers, the X-factor coming in, which himself, he's going to be a case study for this whole NIL and seniors leaving early in high school. And, I mean, I hope the best for the guy. I also hope, though, that this doesn't start to damage high school football. It's such a precious thing in Americana. And I want the big money to slow down a bit. I mean, hopefully they get their share when they make it to college and the pros. But, man, just you want to have high school football stay pure. So we'll see.
Tell everybody how they can get all your information.
All right, thanks. Yeah, it's picksixpreviews.com and picksixpreviews on Twitter. An annual season preview book now in my 10th year. It's all 66 Power 5 teams, and that's me watching spring games, film, calling coaches, calling coordinators, and it's a one-man show. I'm writing all 66 teams, so picksixpreviews.com.
We'll see you next week. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill. See ya.
There he is, Brett Cianci. Blake Ruffino will join us top of the hour. Always